Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here on this program are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Dr. Garth Nicholson. And Dr. Nicholson was professor at the MB Anderson Clinic and had a department there with 150 people in it. And he has the most amazing story to tell. Because he, of course, was the individual who uncovered the fact that there was a mycoplasm, that many of the people who had Gulf War illness and chronic fatigue syndrome and many of these other chronic fibromyalgia, many of these people had an atypical type of mycoplasm infection. Now, certainly long before I put Dr. Nicholson onto our programs, I went to our local medical library and I wanted to pull down all the articles he had written because I wanted to be sure that he was what he said he was. And, of course, we went to the medical library and after they'd pulled down 300 or 400 articles he had written, why, the poor exasperated librarian said, "Do you really want me to pull any more down?" And I said, "No, it really isn't necessary." And, the floor was all covered with all these articles. Dr. Nicholson has been a leader in medicine for a long period of time. I've talked to some of his students and other scientists. His reputation is impeccable. He has the most amazing story to tell. Dr. Nicholson, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Be on your program, and I apologize. Last time we had a power outage down here, and that caused me to not be on the air.
Oh, well, that was fine. We had a fascinating program. That's one thing about talk radio is people are always calling in. But I really missed having the opportunity to be with you. Now, I've read your book. I'm about halfway through it, Operation Daylily, or Project Daylily. This is an amazing book. When will this be available for our listeners to read?
It should be out later this spring. It's in production right now.
It's an amazing book. Do you want to talk about this, or what should we do?
Well, that's fine. I mean, the book itself, which is called Project Daylily, just really tells of the events of our uncovering the testing that was going on in the prison system in Texas, as well as on military recruits and our armed forces who were deployed during Operation Desert Storm.
Well, I think the amazing thing is, of course, I've talked to some of the people you have. The book is written as a fictional account, but it's pretty easy for me to figure out who the players are, and certainly what the universities are and the various institutions. And, you know, I think it's so important that our listeners understand that this had to do with Operation Paperclip. Many of our listeners know what that is. This is where the CIA brought over the Nazi scientists at the end of the Second World War. But why is that important?
Well, it's important because of what they brought with them. This happened right at the end of World War II, actually even before the CIA was formed. The OSS brought over German and Japanese scientists who had been not only involved in rocketry, as we well know, but also involved in chemical and biological warfare, and that the general public doesn't know much about. And the history of this particular microorganism that we found goes back to Eastern Europe during the Second World War when it was being used to experiment in the death camps.
All right, we're going to be back in just a minute, but this is an amazing story, so don't even think about changing the dial. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson, who, of course, was the youngest professor in the University of California system when he was recruited from the University of California system to go to the MB Anderson Clinic in Texas, where he headed a department with about 150 researchers. They were researching in cancer biology. But when the Gulf War came along, and there were all these veterans that were coming back, and we're talking about, tens of thousands of these young men were seriously ill, and of course some of them, one of them was his stepdaughter, and he wanted to help these people. I mean, they were not getting any help from the government. The government was denying the entity existed, and these people were not only sick, some of them were dying. It was one of the greatest cover-ups of all time, and it's still a cover-up. But Dr. Nicholson uncovered the fact that many of the people, about 40% of them or so, actually had a mycoplasma infection. And then we were talking about the fact that these mycoplasms, of course, have been brought to the United States by the evil, and they really were evil, Nazi scientists working on biological warfare during the Second World War, who were experimenting on the people in the concentration camps and killing them with this new modified type of organism. Would you like to talk about what this modified, how they've been able to modify the mycoplasm to make it pathological? Because most of them really are not very pathological, are they?
Well, there are over 50 known species of mycoplasma, actually meaning more than that, but I think about 50 have been identified in humans, but there are only about a half a dozen that have been really proven to be pathogenic in humans. So by and large, these types of little bacterial microorganisms can be found, for example, in the oral cavity, where they really don't cause much problem. But some of the species do cause a problem, particularly when they invade into the system. And one of the first things that happens is that they invade the vascular system, and this sets up a condition called vasculitis. And this causes all sorts of abnormalities. But if left on their own and untreated, they will eventually colonize, that is, one of these six pathogenic species will colonize all the major organs of the body. And the most important thing, I think, is that they can penetrate into the central nervous system and cause all kinds of abnormalities in the brain. And often these mimic as Lou Gehrig's disease or multiple sclerosis or other types of neurodegenerative diseases, because these little microorganisms can actually kill cells. And when they start killing nerve cells, and they can do this by a number of different mechanisms, they cause havoc, as you can imagine.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to have to bring our other stations right back on with it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Garth Nicholson. He's talking about this organism. It's called a mycoplasma. Now, when I went to medical school, we didn't even know what a mycoplasma was. If they did, they never taught me about it. I graduated from the University of California back in 1952. And so these probably were known, but they certainly were nothing we talked about at that time. It wasn't really until the early 1980s I heard people talking about this atypical pneumonia, which was related to a mycoplasma. But when did they first start realizing that the mycoplasma did infect the urinary tract and the pulmonary tract and things? When was it recognized as a pathogen?
Well, actually, most of the work on that was done during the 70s, where it was recognized that, for example, Mycoplasma pneumoniae can cause a community pneumonia, and also various mycoplasmas, like Mycoplasma genitalium, for example, Mycoplasma fermentans, can cause urogenital infections. And so it was this is about as far as the research had gone until the reports actually from the U.S. Army Institute of Pathology, or the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, where Shai-Ching Lo and his colleagues had been working with mycoplasma, such as Mycoplasma fermentans, and they had reported that these can be quite dangerous and can lead to death. And in fact, they'd done some experiments injecting Mycoplasma fermentans into animals, such as chimpanzees, and it resulted in a fatal disease. So we knew that they were dangerous at that point, but still I think the medicine in general was completely in the dark about this, and I think on purpose. I think they were purposely misled into thinking that these were benign microorganisms.
Well, I think really what's so significant is the fact that Dr. Lowe actually got a patent on this mycoplasma fermentans. And didn't he point out that you find this in most AIDS cases and at chronic fatigue and in many diseases that we'd never recognized this playing a part in before? When was that patent taken out, and why would they bother to patent a pathological organism that can wreak such havoc on the human body?
Well, they actually, what they patented were the tests to detect the particular microorganism, and in fact that patent was applied for in 1987, well before the Gulf War, about the time that we have some evidence that it was being tested, at least in the early 80s, in the prison system in Texas and some other locations as well, and also perhaps on military recruits, because we've had a number of ex-military people that have come to us describing some medical experiments that they were involved in. In fact, one of them we've been trying to help for years. It virtually destroyed his health. He was a young Marine recruit, and when he was at MCRD in San Diego, the Marine Recruit Depot in San Diego, he was volunteered, his entire platoon was volunteered for medical experiments. And then they were shipped out to Camp Pendleton, and they all became sick, and then they were sent to Balboa Naval Hospital, and many of them didn't survive. As a matter of fact, he was told that he was one of the few in his platoon that actually survived. They gave him a medical discharge, and he's been sick, ill ever since. And since that time, they tried to deny he was ever in the Marines, and then they tried to deny he was ever at Balboa Naval Hospital, but he finally got his congressman involved, and they finally were able to extract his records. And yes, he'd been a Marine, he'd been given a medical discharge, he was at Balboa Naval Hospital, and he actually was able to get his medical records. And the physician chief who was in charge of this experiment, and he finally worked out all the codes for the experiments, turned out to be the person in charge of the Gulf War illness studies at the Pentagon. So they've known about this for a long time. In fact, they've been doing this to their recruits for a long time.
And I think really what's so unconscionable is they executed Nazi scientists, at least a few of them at Nuremberg, because, of course, they were doing these terrible experiments on people without their permission, and yet there have been people within our government that have been doing exactly the same thing, not only in the military, but on prisoners, without their knowledge, many times their consent, and, of course, many times this has created terrible problems, as it did in Huntsville. So where do you want to go? Do you want to talk about Huntsville? Do you want to talk about the military? Or do you want to talk about the Gulf War illness, which I think is one of the most macabre experiments of all time?
Well, these are all part of the same general story, and it's covered in our book, Project Daylily. And when this comes actually out on the market and your listeners are able to get a copy of it, they'll be able to read. It's a fictionalized version, but it's based on a true story. In fact, all the science is true, and all the events are true, but we've fictionalized the dialogue and made composite characters so that we wouldn't run into this business of having the book held back from publication just because there were people trying to sue to prevent disclosure.
And of course, the thing is that the American people understand that they are experimenting on our soldiers, and they're killing them, and of course they're developing these terrible, terrible diseases, and many times these not only start out, you know, within a prison like Huntsville, but pretty soon it extends into the guards, and then into the guards' families. The story of what happened in Huntsville is the most incredible story, and the CDC was called in, and they covered it up. But would you like to tell our listeners what happened in Huntsville, Texas?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the CDC. Some have called this the Center for Disease Cover-Ups.
I think you're absolutely right.
And this organization, most recently, is trying to promote a scenario where they will take over essentially the research efforts in biologic defense. And along with that, they've decided to do surveillance on all physicians who order antibiotics for their patients and all patients who require antibiotics. And they want to step in and perhaps intervene in that process. And this, I find this to be an amazing flagrant overuse of government to try and step into people's lives and control physicians and intimidate them, essentially. And this is going on in the Lyme disease physician community at the moment, and it's going to be repeated over and over again in all these other areas that have to do with infectious disease.
And, of course, they're trying to say, oh, you shouldn't use antibiotics, oh, it's terrible, it's creating resistance organisms, it's creating all sorts of intestinal problems. And, you know, certainly I was around before the antibiotics were available, and we used to have whole wards full of young children with chronic osteomyelitis, and there was just no way to cure it. And, you know, we never saw that once we started the antibiotics available. They were one of the greatest advantages of all time. And there's an effort, I think, to confuse doctors about what's going on and confuse the public and to discourage using things that can save lives today.
Well, unfortunately, I think you're right. And I find this sort of new presence of the CDC to be alarming at a very minimum. This will, I think, change the way physicians practice medicine in our country very dramatically, if this ever comes to pass.
Well, you know, I think that, of course, they were in charge of stopping the AIDS epidemic, and they refused to do anything that was really necessary, effective, to stop this epidemic. A half a million Americans have died of this disease, and almost another 900,000 are infected, and they're probably going to die before long. This is either the greatest failure of all time, or the greatest success story of all time, depending upon what you believe that the function of the Centers for Disease Control is. But nobody ever wants to say that.
Well, unfortunately, the truth will eventually come out. And in a way, it's a very sad story. And I don't know if we should go on and on this. But I think there's some ominous clouds on the horizon when it comes to this organization and what's going to happen in medicine in the future.
Would you like to comment at all about the massive propaganda campaign that's been put out about the threat of this Asian flu and that, oh my goodness, 45 people have died in Thailand, so we're going to make millions of doses of this, you know, to give the American people the vaccine for this Asian bird flu or whatever it is. There have been one instance of person-to-person transmission, but we've got to be ready to vaccinate the entire American population down the line. What's this all about? And some of these flu viruses are finding that genes that have been actually created in the laboratory. There's some material coming out on that. Man-made genes and some of these flu influenza organisms. What's this happening?
Well, unfortunately, there's quite an interest in some of the early influenzas, like the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, which wreaked havoc on a global scale and killed millions of people. And there's an interest in finding out why these influenza viruses were so pathogenic. And along with finding that out, of course, that information can be used for offensive biological warfare use. And so the information isn't benign. The information has a dark side to it. And I think there's an emphasis on trying to build the bigger bomb, more or less, and in this case, a biologic bomb. And I just can't believe that people would invest their time and efforts into what I consider to be completely unethical science.
But, of course, as you point out in your book, or at least as your wife points out in the book, she really feels there's evil in the world.
Well, I think if people think there isn't evil in the world, there's something wrong with them. But I think we're all in a battle. There is a battle of good and evil. That may be an oversimplification, but I think it goes on all around us.
And certainly you found yourself sort of in the middle of this and never intended to do anything. You were a scientist. You just wanted to be left alone and do your science. But forces developed that wouldn't allow you to do that because you were trying to find out why all these people were ill. And we're talking about the government now admits that over 174,000 people are ill from the first Gulf War illness. Is that a realistic figure? Do you think it's higher than that? Or do we have any way of knowing?
Well, it's higher than that because the infections have now penetrated into the population. We just published late last year an article showing that the infection has penetrated into immediate family members, and they're now showing the same signs and symptoms as the Gulf War veterans.
And, of course, what percentage of them, what percentage of the family members are getting the disease? This non-existent disease, the disease the government says doesn't exist, what percentage of the family members are coming down with a disease that doesn't exist?
Well, unfortunately, we don't know, although the U.S. Senate did a non-scientific study and found out that 77% of the spouses and 65% of the children of Gulf War veterans were now showing the same signs and symptoms And that was a study done back in 1994.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you think this doesn't involve you and your family, I think you're sadly mistaken. You better find out what this is really all about, because this is the most incredible story. I'm having a hard time getting any work done because I want to keep reading Dr. Garth Nicholson's book. We'll be right back. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-1 and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine, but those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson, and he has certainly been researching the background of this strange illness that at least first became apparent when it was infecting our men, over at least many of our men over in the Gulf, and is responsible for so many men being incapacitated now. As I said, the government will admit to 174,000. I suspect it's a lot more than that. Do we have any idea how many of the veterans of the first Gulf War, these otherwise young, healthy men, you know, who should live 70 years or more, how many of them have actually died?
Well, the reports that we heard, and these are unofficial, in fact, the actual numbers are classified, and it's a few years old, were that 28,000 had perished from unknown illnesses in the Gulf, from the Gulf War.
And, of course, this organism actually can penetrate any part of the body, can't it? The heart, the liver, almost any organ in the body?
That's correct. And, in fact, there are some organs which are more at risk than others. And it leads to slightly different complications and diseases or illnesses in different patients, depending upon their own unique systems. But often people will have coronary problems, they'll have respiratory problems, they'll have central nervous system problems, they'll have certain glands like the thyroid gland are at high risk, and often these patients show either hyper or hypothyroidism. The bowel is at risk, and inflammatory bowel diseases are very very commonly found in these types of patients, and the list goes on and on and on.
And of course, don't the people sort of get an autoimmune type of disease from this?
Well, they do. The particular mycoplasmas that penetrate into cells, these can set up what's known as an autoimmune complication or autoimmune response. And the reason we feel this happens is that the microorganism, when it escapes from the cells, these are not like viruses, which are so compact that they exclude all the host antigens and membrane proteins from their structure, but just take the lipids. On the other hand, the mycoplasma will take both the proteins and the lipids from the host membrane when they bud off and are released. And this can cause an autoimmune response. When the host responds against the microorganism, they'll see those host antigens and also mount what's called a concomitant immune response against the host antigens. So you get response against your own self-antigens, and this leads to what's called autoimmune disease.
Well, now, isn't it extremely difficult to diagnose this? In other words, this doesn't act like other infections. You don't get necessarily an elevated SED rate, or you don't have to get a white cell count that's increased. How do you, how can the average individual, or even the individual doctor, make a diagnosis of this disease?
Well, you can get those abnormalities. For example, abnormalities in SED rate, that's not uncommon. And you do get changes in a variety of blood parameters. You can get changes in white cell counts. But often it's the changes are not dramatic because these are chronic infections. These are very slow-growing, smoldering-type infections. And so we don't see the dramatic changes that we see with acute bacterial infections. So physicians looking for changes that are caused by acute infections will not see those changes in these chronically infected patients. And so they can be misled, or they can think that there's not really an infection there.
And so these people go from doctor to doctor looking for help, and certainly not, if they're veterans, they're not going to get any help from the VA hospitals, will they?
No, they won't. That's the sad thing. Not only will they not get any help, but I think they'd be purposely misled into believing that they have psychiatric problems, for example, or other problems that don't really have anything to do with their medical condition.
And of course, there are treatments that really will help some of these people, aren't there?
Yes, there are, and we've used them. And in fact, the U.S. Army has actually published one of the procedures for getting patients better that have these infections. It includes antibiotics, but we found that that's not the only thing that's required. We have to also build back the immune system, which is often modified because of the infections. We also have to recommend probiotics to restore the function of the gut, for example, and help the gut to be able to better absorb and function. And there are a number of other things as well in terms of certain vitamins and minerals that are depleted by the body. And recently we've done some studies on a lipid replacement therapy type of reagent that's available now. And this really helps people that have fatigue, and also helps people that just go through the natural consequence of aging and the degeneration of their membranes and their mitochondria due to oxidation of their membranes.
And isn't it that this organism actually destroys the mitochondria and really destroys so much of the cell, and this gives the people this terrible feeling of fatigue, and they just can't think, they just feel terrible all the time?
That's exactly right. In fact, these infections cause the mitochondria to become leaky, And the mitochondria, you can think of them as the little batteries inside our cells providing energy. Well, you know that if you take a battery and strip the insulation off the battery, it will discharge and run down very quickly and not be functional. And the same thing happens inside our cells when the membrane gets damaged.
Oh, please hold that thought.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Would you like your school to reflect the same traditional family values as your home? Then VHM Christian School is just what you're looking for. A quality Christian education taught by credentialed, energetic, and loving teachers for ages preschool through 8th grade. We invite you to visit VHM on March 9th from 10 to 11 a.m. This is a special visitation day to acquaint everyone interested in our comprehensive program of faith integrated with learning. VHM is located in the Live Oak area of Santa Cruz and stands for Virgil Hossel Memorial. But for over 50 years, it has become affectionately known as VHM to the surrounding community. Aside from the visitation day, you may also be interested in the Children's Health Expo on March 13th from 2 to 4 p.m. Speak with experts in the field of health, exercise, and diet with ideas to help you and your children. Call 475-4762 for more information. That's VHM at 475-4762. Being taught of God by the sea.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is a serious medical problem that is, well, in many cases, of course, it's not being addressed at all, and the average doctor finds difficulty. People come in, they complain, they ache all over, they got bizarre symptoms, you work them up, and you don't find anything, and, well, of course, what are you going to do? A lot of people will say this is just all really psychiatric, and so many of these people then are told it's all in their head, especially our servicemen, our young servicemen coming back, and of course, so many of them have been ill and continue to be ill, dating all the way back, of course, to the early 1990s. Now, sometimes doesn't it take many years before these chronic infections become obvious?
Time is generally around 6 months, and it may take as long as 2 to 3 years before the symptoms really start to become apparent.
All right. So so the same thing could be happening with the boys coming back today. But this continued even after the Gulf War, didn't the young people continuing to take the vaccinations continue coming down with these diseases, or did that stop right after the Gulf War?
No, it did not. In fact, there's also some linkage of illness to the anthrax vaccine and other military vaccines. And if the recruits continue to receive for example, the anthrax vaccine, we will continue to see casualties.
All right, and so really an awful lot of people have been seriously incapacitated, and then their children and their wives have been incapacitated. Now, what is the relationship between this disease and the chronic fatigue syndrome, which is, I mean, they say there are about 800,000 people with chronic fatigue in America. When I went to medical school, this disease just didn't exist.
Actually, if you count fibromyalgia syndrome as one of the fatiguing illnesses, there are at least 2 million people in this country that are probably stricken with these types of illnesses, from mild to severe. And yes, they're almost exactly similar to GO4 illness. In fact, early on, we showed that the signs and symptoms were almost identical between GO4 illness and chronic fatigue syndrome.
And, of course, you found, at least in a significant number of these people, that they had these chronic mycoplasma infections. About what percentage of chronic fatigue will have the infection that you can demonstrate?
About 50%, and it's about the same in Europe as well, although, interestingly, the chronic fatigue syndrome patients in Europe, they have a different makeup of mycoplasmal infections. The most prominent mycoplasma found in European cases turns out to be Mycoplasma hominis, whereas in the United States, it's Mycoplasma pneumoniae and Mycoplasma fermentans are the most common.
Well, every time I have you on the program, where there's a group over in, I think it's in Belgium, who always calls and asks if they can play the tape on their website, and I always tell them, of course, go ahead with my blessing, because you know apparently this is a real factor in Europe as well as here in the United States. And you know, I remember one of my friends who was a physician who was really doing, you know, a very good, he was a cancer specialist, and he had a kidney transplant, as I remember, and a lot of transfusions, and he came out down with chronic fatigue after that. Could there be any relationship between blood transfusions and this chronic fatigue syndrome?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the past president of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine actually noted this, that a certain percentage of blood transfusions will actually end up as chronic fatigue syndrome patients. And in fact, a study in Europe shows that about 6% of transfusion patients can end up to be chronic fatigue syndrome patients, and it's traceable to chronic infections, not only mycoplasmal infections, but chlamydia pneumoniae, in our country, of course, the Borrelia, which causes Lyme disease, along with mycoplasma, which is a common co-infection, and other chronic infections as well. We just have a publication coming out on brucella. Brucella, which has been worked on by the Army as a weapon, is actually a prominent problem in rural areas of the United States, where people come down with fatiguing illnesses, and commonly they're found to have brucella infections. And they can get this from the local herds of cattle and sheep, for example, because there it's an endemic problem. So these types of infections can pass between animals to humans and humans to animals. And in fact, we know that often people that have chronic fatigue syndrome and have these infections will have sick pets as well. Not only their family members can become sick, but their pets can become sick because the infection can pass to their pets. These infections are not wildly contagious like influenza, but with prolonged contact, they can slowly pass to immediate family members and pets and anyone that is closely associated with the infected individual.
Well, now, why was there so much opposition to your trying to find out why our troops were ill? It would seem, having read your book, Project Daylily, that there were tremendous forces that were aligned, intent upon blocking your efforts as a scientist to find out what was making our young men ill, why they were dying.
Well, I think it has to do with the liability of this whole issue, of the fact that the vaccines may have been contaminated, but in fact, totally independent from us, epidemiologists who've been studying the vaccines for years now, and I know of one article in particular that I think is striking that comes out of Kansas, and it's actually published by one of the state epidemiologists of Kansas who studied the Kansas veterans that came back from the Gulf War, and she found that the veterans that received the vaccines were at much higher risk to come down with Gulf War illness, and even some of the veterans that weren't deployed but received the vaccines were at risk to come down with Gulf War illness. So you did not have to be deployed to come down with the illness, although the other exposures and environmental toxins that they encountered in the Gulf probably played a role as well.
Well, I was, really very concerned when I saw the statistics that were in that September Veterans Administration report that was released, and they were talking, I think, 62% of the British veterans of the Gulf War, and even up to 65%, close to that, of the veterans from New England and with some sort of a unit, they were all ill. That's a frightening figure.
Well, the figures right now, we don't know the real figures, unfortunately, because it's all being kept from us. But just from the accounts, the anecdotal accounts, and the studies that have been done piecemeal, indicate that at least 20% of the deployed forces came back and eventually became ill with various illnesses. But we're most interested in the undiagnosed illnesses, because they came back with a variety of different problems. And the undiagnosed illnesses turned out to be the most intractable and the most difficult to diagnose and treat.
Well, is there an element of brucella, in other words, brucellosis, mixed in sometimes with this mycoplasma infection?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the publication that I mentioned, which is coming out in the next issue of the Journal of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, looks at that very issue. It looks at the co-infections of brucella mycoplasma, and as you can imagine, the patients that get more than one infection tend to be sicker. In fact, we published a paper in a Scandinavian pathology journal last year showing that the patients that have multiple infections are inevitably the ones with the most signs and symptoms and the most severe signs and symptoms.
Well, is there any possibility that this is some sort of a biological warfare experiment that's gone bad?
Well, some of it is, and some of it, I think, is quite natural, and it's hard to tell the difference, and the only way that you can really tell is to do the genetic analysis of the microorganisms, and that's something that got us into a lot of trouble when we ventured into that area.
And you did find out that there seemed to be some genetic modification of this mycoplasma fermentans incognitus. In other words, this was not a normally occurring organism?
Well, what we found was, and I have to really restrict my comments to the prison guards in Texas and some of the Gulf War veterans, we found that there were some unusual genes or pieces of genes in this microorganism that we wouldn't expect. Some of these genes, for example, have to do with heat resistance, and some of them have to do with making the microorganism more pathogenic. In fact, we got into a lot of trouble when we found part of the HIV envelope gene in some of the mycoplasmal infections found in Gulf War veterans. And, of course, we were brutally attacked when we reported this. And, in fact, we've never actually published that information because of the threats on our lives to stop what we were doing and to not pursue this any further.
Well, of course, the implications of that really are rather frightening because, I mean, at least there are many of the black population. A recent survey of the blacks in America suggested that 50% of the blacks believe that HIV, this virus that we see associated with AIDS, probably not the only organism, but at least plays an important part of it, was actually genetically modified. And you're finding one of the molecules from the envelope gene of the HIV on the mycoplasm, this organism that has infected so many of our young men?
Well, we found that not on every case from the Gulf War, but on some of the cases, we found a modified, what we think was a modified mycoplasma that contained this and other modified gene elements. And we're not quite sure what this means, but if you look at the source of these genes and the types of genes, this is exactly what you'd do if you wanted to weaponize a microorganism, that is, turn it into a weapon, make it more resistant, that is, make it more heat resistant, more dry resistant, more pathogenic, and a variety of other characteristics that to make it a more ideal weapon.
Well, because the thing is that ordinarily the organism doesn't, it, of course, die if it's outside of the body. If it, you know, if it, it has to be in the cells before it's going to be protected, unless, of course, it's been modified. What you're suggesting, it's somehow by one means or another, it has been modified so that it is much more resistant, will not die as readily. Would that be what they would call weaponized, or what?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. And for example, when you see things. Let me give you an example. Sporulation, which can occur in certain types of bacteria, this is a technique which will render the bacteria very resistant to heat and dryness and so on, and spores can live for long periods of time. Anthrax, for example, is a sporulating bacteria, and anthrax spores can survive in the soil for 100 years and so on. And then if they're inhaled, they can then regenerate into intact microorganisms. And the genes that control sporulation, for example, that would be the type of gene that, or series of genes that you might put in a microorganism to weaponize it.
What really is frightening to me is what the scientists can do now. I mean, you know, this ability could be used for good, but it could also be used for evil, to create terrible plagues that would really wipe out large numbers of people. Is that a possibility?
Well, that's certainly a possibility, and this is something that we kind of alluded to at the beginning of your program. And it's something that you hope is not occurring, but unfortunately it probably is behind closed laboratory doors somewhere. We know that some of these microorganisms are being modified in ways which will make them much more dangerous, much more pathogenic, much more able to destroy our immune system, much more able to hide inside cells and away from our own immune system, and a number of other properties, and it's very frightening.
And, of course, the NIH is spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars every year on research, and a lot of it, of course, we don't know what that research is, although we do have some of their records, at least the records of some of the experiments that have been done at our universities, and when you see what they're doing, you wonder why they're doing the things they are. Now, what's the relationship between mycoplasma and AIDS? Because everybody thinks that, well, of course, AIDS is all HIV, but is AIDS really something more than simply HIV infection, as we've been led to believe?
Absolutely. In fact, you can have an HIV infection and go on living a relatively normal life because it's the other infections that actually kill you, not the HIV. The HIV can suppress your immune system, but other than that, it's a relatively non-pathogenic. What happens is that it leaves you wide open for a variety of other infections which are pathogenic, and those are the infections which kill you. And in fact, one of the most common infections found in AIDS patients are the mycoplasmal infections like Mycoplasma fermentans, a very common co-infection in AIDS.
And I think that was really what was such a revelation to me, that this is never brought out in the literature, and it has not been that I read your material and the material put out by Dr. Lowe of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. I don't think the average doctor has any realization that most of these, the vast majority of AIDS patients actually have, what was the figure, something like 80%, a mycoplasmin co-infection?
That's correct, and according to Dr. Lowe and others who've studied this more in AIDS patients than we have, and this is a very common co-infection along with some other very pathogenic co-infections as well. But in Lyme patients, this is also a major co-infection. We found that approximately 70% of Lyme patients will have a mycoplasma co-infection. And again, the most prominent species is Mycoplasma fermentans. And not only our studies, but also there's a laboratory in New Jersey that's found very similar results as well. So it's, I think this is a very real result, and it's a very important result for Lyme patients.
And what's really so fascinating is when I went to medical school, we had never heard of Lyme disease. Was Lyme disease around before? Is this a relatively new disease?
Well, we're not sure if it was around before, but it's certainly in its pathogenic form is relatively new, and it started, in fact, the name is named after Old Lyme, Connecticut, where the disease was first documented. And, in fact, there is some speculation that this disease originated from Plum Island during the insect vector experiments that were being conducted on the island. And the birds may have picked it up, and the bird flight pattern is directly over to the Connecticut coastline. So
where Lyme, Connecticut is, right?
Yeah, and those sorts of things are not conclusive proof, but I think they're warning signs, and the fact that it appeared not only there, it appeared there and not elsewhere, except for some local cases around the tip of Long Island, which, of course, is right across from Plum Island.
We do carry that book, Lab 257, which is the story of Plum Island. It's really a very interesting book. Well, what can people do? Certainly, you have a website, and I want people to know how to get to your website, because you have a lot of suggestions of what people can do to build up their immunity and to try to counter these chronic infections that are disabling so many Americans today.
Well, they can go on our website, which is www.immed.org. It's immediate.org. That's how you remember it. immed.org. Just remember immediate.org. And you can access that site and download. There must be 100 publications on the site now that you can download and read. And there's also treatment advice and advice on how to get tested and what laboratories to use and so on and so forth.
And, of course, if you have one of these chronic infections, chronic fatigue, a Gulf War illness, fibromyalgia, why, this is one of the best sites I know to get the information because, of course, unfortunately, the average doctor is unacquainted with these with the disability that's here. But Dr. Nicholson has done a tremendous amount of work on that. How many months will it be before that book is available? Because I certainly will want all of our listeners to read Operation Daylily.
Well, probably about 3 months, I would guess.
Project Daylily?
Project Daylily.
Oh, Project Daylily. All right, fine. Well,
the name is actually from the Army code name for the project, so that's where we got the name.
Right. Well, thank you so very much for being with us. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, if you have these chronic degenerative illnesses, and this includes autoimmune illnesses like rheumatoid arthritis and other fatiguing illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia syndrome, other autoimmune diseases, like neurodegenerative diseases, chronic infections play a major role in these diseases, and that's what we found, and you should consult our website and find out more about these, how they can be identified, and how they can be treated.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so very much for taking the time to be with us this afternoon.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show again, as always.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
City. Well, a very important video is the cover-up in Oklahoma City. And it really consists of film clips that were actually taken from a video footage shot during the first 2 or 3 days after the bombing. And you'll actually hear the commentators in Oklahoma City talking about the second bomb, the third bomb that had been disarmed. Now, if they were actually disarming bombs, why didn't we hear that throughout the rest of the country? You'll actually hear an interview with one of the gentlemen who was in the Murrah building at the time that the bomb went off, and he had time then to jump underneath his desk before the glass blew in from outside, obviously, and there were two bombs, one inside, one outside. Call 1-800-5-HIV-1.
It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to suggest several books that we have. One, of course, is a Lab 257. It goes into the background of the experimental work that was done on Plum Island by the government creating terrible and horrible new diseases. And you must understand that although we say we've done away with that biological warfare, it just isn't true. And how else are they going to get plagues going in our society? If you don't believe that there are plans to create plagues, you really need to get Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society. And on page 103, he's talking about population control, and he says, we can't, of course, do away with enough people. That's simply with abortion and war. Maybe if we had a black plague that would sweep the world once every generation, why then people could procreate as much as they want to, and we wouldn't have to worry about it. Of course, this might be somewhat unpleasant, but of course, high-minded people are really unconcerned about the happiness of others, especially the happiness of other people. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and to really understand the significance of what we've been talking about today, you need to get my video, Population Control. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control. You need to get our 4-tape set on why do we still have cancer, on genocide. And then, of course, we have a great new video. It's called Nundare College Genocide. And, of course, we give you a summary of everything going on in the world today. There are thousands, well, by government officials say there are about 800,000 people with chronic fatigue. Dr. Nicholson says probably if you add the people with fibromyalgia, 2 million Americans, a little less than 1% of our population, is totally disabled by this chronic disabling condition. We have a book called Osler's Web, written by Hillary Johnson. It's the true story of where this all came from. And it's quite obvious that it came from government experiments and it has been covered up ever since then. And people say, oh, I don't believe that they would do things like that. Well, you wouldn't have thought they would have done the things that they did at Tuskegee. But remember, nobody was ever published for killing all those black men. 400 black men recruited for an experiment with had syphilis, and they were deprived of the ability to get treatment. They were tracked like animals to keep them from getting treatment so they would die here in America. And if you've never heard our 4-tape set on Tuskegee, you need to hear it because there's nothing like it. I mean, we have an interview with the man who broke the case. We have an interview with the man who wrote the classic book on that, James Jones, his book, Bad Blood. You need to understand the evil that was involved in Tuskegee. And since they got away with that, they can get away with everything. You need to get my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, and understand that they have not tried to use the standard public health techniques that could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives here in America. You need to go to my website and pull down some of my articles on vaccines, the articles on the creating new diseases here in America. Did you know, for instance, that of the homosexuals who were foolish enough to take the experimental hepatitis B vaccine back in 78 and 79, 75% of them got AIDS. 75% of them contracted AIDS. Gee, I wonder why that was. And that in Africa, where they gave that same hepatitis B vaccine, experimental hepatitis B vaccine, that's the parts of Africa where there's so much AIDS today. But nobody ever talks about that. Could it be that this is the greatest genocidal success of all of modern times? That, as Dr. MacArthur testified before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969, he wanted $10 million to create a disease for there to be no immune response. And some people think it's another means of mass killing, but we want the money for the... And we've got the testimony. If you doubt that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Challenge us. Make us show you the testimony. We have it. In fact, somebody in government sent it to me. They wanted us to get the information out because they know you're not going to get it on ABC, CBS, NBC, or Dan Rather, or Tom Brokaw. Of course, he's gone now, Brian Williams. But, of course, Rush Limbaugh's not going to tell you this either. Nor is Bill O'Reilly or Sean or Hannity or any of the conservative publications or any of the liberal publications. That's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and we hope many of you will want to help us. Quite frankly, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing and reaching out. And as our audience grows and more people understand the true nature of the evil we face today. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, you need to. And, of course, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the video, the audio, or simply the book. Or get them all together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special, and you're welcome to copy the video and copy the tape. You need my new video. It's called Nundare College Genocide. You need a good our 4-tape set on mercury to find out what they're doing to your children's brains, or water fluoridation, or aspartame. And the scientific studies are all up in the net. Have you been up there looking to check it out? Don't believe what you read in the newspaper. Get the facts yourself. Help us educate the doctors who want to do the right thing, but they're not getting the truth from their medical journals. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today.